This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, hello and good morning. Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Joyce Go. This morning that was Hey Hey My My by Neil Young. 6:01 right now on Monday the 22nd of October. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Well, that is one way to start on Monday morning, I tell you what.
That's going to be my anthem. Okay?
Exactly,
when I walk
right?
into a room, that's going to play the guitar riff. Play from now on in my head. Keep us company all the way till 10 o'clock, please. We want to hear from you today. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. You can join the conversation anytime. Just remember to mention your name if you're texting in on WhatsApp. We want to give you a shout out. We can't do that if you don't text in your name. Right, guys, let's take a look at what's happened over the weekend. Now, three of us being from Penang, I'm sure we're quite invested with what's happening there with the landslide that happened on Friday afternoon. Now, yesterday it was the third day of the search and rescue operations. Three more bodies were found, and it brings the total fatalities from the landslide to seven now. So this is the landslide that happened near Ai Itam, which is where my family lives, my extended family lives, my cousins and uncles.
Yeah, I saw these stories last night, and I did some searching. What struck me about this item is two things, right? One of all is the fact that the seven victims were all foreigners, right? Specifically Bangladeshi foreigners. And the fact that that neighborhood is actually quite a well-built-up area. There's kind of like a little green lung in between Paitrubong, which is on Ai Itam, and Glugor on the right. And in between, there's this jungle kind of thing, right? And this development is happening right where that green lung is. And, you know...
Oh, so Chuang has just pulled out the Google Earth search, the Google Earth image of this. And you're absolutely right. We're seeing a lot of development with a little piece of green in the middle.
Yeah, and this area is basically land that has been cleared for probably some condominium or some housing
area. It's very hilly there, Chuang.
It's very hilly. So I'm not surprised. I mean, look, this is the rainy season now, and there's been incessant rainfall for the last few days. Look, the calls for less development on Penang Island have never been louder than now. And I think it's about right when we really look at development.
Yeah, I think this the landslide at the construction site of the PAD highway project in Bukit Kukus on Friday, I think there were four injured victims made up of a Bangladeshi man and three Indonesian women. So there are victims, injured people who are injured as well as those who have passed on. And this is, I think last year as well, there was another landslide.
Actually, Joyce, it was almost exactly a year. Mm. This was in Tanjung Bunga. It happened on the 21st of October. So almost a year to the date.
Same rainy season.
Mm. So you had a landslide in Tanjung Bunga, which claimed 11 lives. And then now this year, we have one on the other side of the island in Paitrubong, already claiming 7 lives. And Chuang, you're absolutely right. You know, 2 Indonesian men, 4 Bangladeshi men, a Myanmar woman. The question really is whether... I wonder whether because they're foreigners, we're not seeing more outrage, you know, in the papers, on social media. There are people out there who are saying, well, stop hillside developments for now, completely, right? We have to do this. It's now or never. But whether it's not getting, you know, the kind of traction and the coverage it would have gotten had these fatalities been local.
Well, that's the knee-jerk reaction, but you know, Malaysia has made so many mistakes in the past with the bus tragedies, and of course, local Malaysians have perished, yeah? We haven't really paid attention. I mean, bus drivers are still as mad as hatters on the highway, and we haven't really learned our lessons. You know, I don't know what it is, right? Is it because there's not enough resources to go around? Is it because there's so much complacency in the system? Is it all of the above? I don't know.
Mm.
This would never happen as frequently as it has in Malaysia, in a developed country. Hate to say it, this will not happen in Australia, for example.
Why do you think it's happened so frequently in Penang?
Do you think because of the development and maybe the whole geography of Penang? I think in this case, there's a news article that says that water from stream identified as main cause of the Penang landslide. So what they're saying is that the water from a stream on a hilly area of Paitrubong, that has been identified as among the causes for this landslide last Friday, could be because...
Could be because of development, overdevelopment.
The
answer to Melissa's question is this, right? Because Penang is a nice place to stay. It is a retirement haven for many, many people. And the demand for condominiums with a sea view is great, yeah? So that's why there's so much development. And for the state to turn down investment of this kind because it's easy, because of low-hanging fruit, it's difficult to turn down. Penang and the Malaysia has to take a stand and say, look, we do not want this development. We do not want to lose any more lives. And let's be more sensible about this whole thing. That's the answer. That's the problem.
Well, tell us what you think again. I'm just going to reiterate our WhatsApp number, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to continue looking at this story throughout the morning, so join the conversation. More news and analysis after this, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Daydreaming by Aretha Franklin there. It's coming up to 10 minutes. You're listening to The Morning Round with Melissa Chuang and Joyce. And Jet Li apparently had the chance to join one of the biggest franchises in Hollywood. It was the Matrix franchise. So apparently, in the early 2000s, the Wachowski siblings, who directed that franchise, offered him the part of Seraph in the second part of the trilogy, the Matrix Reloaded. So it turns out now that he turned down the role. Jet Li turned down the role, and he revealed recently why he turned down that role. Apparently, he said the Americans wanted him to film for 3 months, but be with a crew of nine. So, and in that 6 months, they wanted to copy and record all of his moves into a digital library. And then by the end of the recording, the rights of those moves would have gone to the producers, or the movie directors. And the question really is, you know, for someone who has, like Jet Li, who has spent his life perfecting martial arts skills, whether that was the right thing to do. What do you guys think?
Daylight robbery, for sure, man. For sure. Jet Li is doing the right thing. And what he is doing now is absolutely the right template for people like him in the martial... Well, not even martial arts. Everything which has to do with physical activity. Because the digital disruption threatens to take away the abilities and the skills and to withdraw. I mean, okay, what I'm trying to say is there's a parallel in the music industry, right? So you're like a famous band. You've done great things with your catalog. And then Netflix or iFlix or whatever comes along on Spotify, right? They come along and they put all your stuff in a digital library. And then they pay you 0.001% of royalties. And nowhere near what you're going to make if that stuff belongs to you in the digital world. You can say as a corollary that it's your problem for not having spent the time to build up your digital presence. But there must be a compromise in between. There must be a middle ground in between. For example, Hollywood gives the actor or the martial artist a proper royalty for your intellectual property, right? You can't take it away for 6 months and then everything belongs to them. It's just not fair.
Yeah, I think Jet Li, he did share that it was a commercial struggle for him.
Yeah.
I think for him, I guess he wanted the role. I think this is called the Matrix Reloaded, right? Yeah. I mean, it's big for him. And in this case, as Chuang mentioned, but he'll be selling his art. And it's years of training. Can you imagine that?
He's 35 years in the Tibetan mountains, you know, learning from this monk who's like 155 years old.
So the way I see it is also more like artificial intelligence or machine learning, right? So not only has he spent years perfecting martial arts skills, but to record it digitally, they can then superimpose it. So have animation and graphics use his choreography, use his, you know, the way he moves. Without him, actually, you know, you no longer have to spend years learning this because a character
is cheating. That's what it is.
It's essentially, you know, superimposing or animation in terms of the way graphics works in the future, right? No longer do you need to know this. And I think for him, it was about similar to, I think, dancers and choreographers, right? So if they were to come up with something that is their intellectual property, their dance, their choreograph, is that should be their intellectual property, right? But can someone own the moves, moves?
Yeah.
Right? Well, can you trademark that? Can you make that intellectual property?
Well, the producers will say they spend billions and billions of dollars on the algorithms and, you know, they deserve to be compensated. But there must be a middle ground. There's got to be, right? Because otherwise, you know, where do people like Jet Li go? Where do people like Rudolf Nureyev go? Where do people
Shouldn't we want that because for posterity, right? So with all these
on
people...
On their terms, yeah, but not when you take away 100% of your intellectual property rights.
Yeah, and for Jet Li, I guess in this case, he does have his shows and all that to remind us of him. But then again, with technology, these people, what the producers could do is they could watch old videos of Jet Li, and if they want to copy his moves, they might be able to replicate that, but not entirely, because it's still not the real deal.
I'm not against recording in a digital library. I'm actually all for it, but I think that you should compensate the artists accordingly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the problem is, once you have this on digital library, there's no need for the artist anymore.
Yeah, because
right?
AI will modify your moves and make you so much better than before, right?
I was reading this piece on the New York Times. Apparently, machine learning and artificial intelligence can now finish unfinished books, previously unfinished
right,
books. Yeah,
right.
So they can learn the syntax and the style of an author. So if the author passes away or doesn't finish a book or gets writer's block, you can get the machine learning to finish it, which is something I might add I'm looking forward to. Maybe Game of Thrones book 7, book 8.
No, you'll
hurry
be propagating
up and finish the
crime.
Book.
What would Leo Tolstoy think, or William Shakespeare, right? Do you know what I mean? There's got to be something in elegant as a middle ground.
So no machine can do what the human mind can do.
Can, that's the problem.
That's the issue here.
All right, tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll come back and take a look at Syed Saddiq's offer to ex-convicts for ministry jobs. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on Monday, the 22nd of October. This is The Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce, and here keeping you company. That was Everything is Everything by Phoenix. Thank you, Mr. Tan, for weighing in this morning on WhatsApp. He says that he agrees with Chuang, but most Malaysians don't see the value in intellectual property. I do agree with that. And I wonder whether it's because, you know, we feel that there's such a huge distance between, say, Hollywood. We don't see the person that we're impacting, right? We think, oh, you know, what's my couple of cents going to do to the big guys in Hollywood or the famous singers? They can spare a few cents rather than I pay for it. But it's about intellectual property.
Well, that too as well. Plus the prevalence of the black market, because the way the prices have been priced, because the way CDs and music and movies have been priced in Malaysia and Asia by and large, the grey market is coming to fill the void. You can buy a DVD for $3 now, $2, whatever, Blu-ray or whatever.
But
it's so much cheaper.
But it doesn't. You don't feel weird it's hurting. It's hurting the market. I mean,
no.
you're buying illegal goods essentially. Right?
People don't care.
But I think now with more education, all people are more aware of piracy compared to, I think, 10, 15 years ago when it first started out.
You see, right? I think it's because there's that distance, we don't feel it. But if it was someone local, I feel that we would be a bit more ethical about it. Remember what happened with the $1 billion whale? People went, the PDF copy of the book. Mm. A lot of people said, no, I'm not going to download this because this is like stealing money, which is what the book was about, essentially, right?
Yeah, and I think with things like Netflix now and iFlix to some extent and Spotify, this is, the commercial world's way of finding a middle ground, except that in the Spotify case, it is still heavily skewed in front of the producer, but not so much the content creator.
Well, keep them coming, guys. Your messages mean a lot to us this morning. Good morning to Faisal Thena, who weighed in on WhatsApp as well as H, who is liking our music this morning. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, looking at some recent comments made by the Youth and Sports Minister, Syed Saddiq, he said that he's looking to hire 3 former convicts to work in his office at the ministry as an initiative to change the stigma and negative perception around ex-convicts. So this is part of a yellow ribbon campaign, which was implemented by his ministry.
Yeah, and he said that the minister said that he'll discuss the matter in detail with the prisons department and related ministries so that these are the former convicts, can be stationed at his office and he will personally monitor them.
Look at the look on Chong's face.
Well, look, I mean, it's common knowledge, and there's this huge body of arguments for and against the prison system, right? And its fallacies and its efficacy in terms of righting the wrongs of former convicts. There's a huge distinction to be drawn. For example, would you rehire Hannibal Lecter? I wouldn't. Do you know what I mean? Because he eats people for dinner. But if someone theoretically, like, this is a, sorry, it's a fictional character, you are, right?
Chung always goes to the most extreme end of the spectrum the first and then walks his way backwards.
But if someone, you know, for example, a housewife who's impoverished and has got four kids to run or to bring up and then gets nabbed for stealing nasi lemak or for stealing something from Speed Mart 99, I would absolutely rehire her. Do you know what I mean?
Because so you're saying that the crime matters.
The crime matters, but then you by doing the site settings open, is threatening to open the floodgates because then the whole system.
Okay, so what if it was a white collar crime? What if it was criminal breach of trust or money laundering?
Well, then you wouldn't hire the guy in a bank, would you?
But would you hire him? And would you be okay with him being hired at a ministry?
Well, you know that movie Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio, right? The mm-hmm. best people to hire for a particular thing is if they were a convict in the first place. So if for example, you were done for hacking in a server illegally, for example, you would hire them in the system to catch people who used to be like him. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Chong, do you believe in second chances though, that
absolutely,
people deserve?
I agree. Yeah,
doesn't matter what was the crime. It could be Hannibal Lecter. It could be the housewife feeding her four kids.
Yeah.
Either one of them, if after they've gone to prison, they've served their time, do you believe that they should be given a second chance to go out there to find a job, a decent job, a decent law-abiding job again?
Unless your name is Joe Lau, who did what he did for actually no reason whatsoever, except for his own greed.
But
of the time, most crimes have happened for a reason, because they've come from a situation which has forced them into that situation.
Yeah, you know, so the argument in a democracy, in most established democracies, is that once you've served the time, you've paid your debt to you've paid your debt to society, then you are reabsorbed into society. So regardless of what it is, whatever the crime is, you should be able to get a second chance. But the problem is the social stigma, right? I mean, you can't kind of wipe away that perception of having that black mark on your record. So Syed Saddiq now saying that he wants to do this, is this something that should be applauded or something that is of a red flag? And I want to say to Syed Saddiq as well, I mean, great that you want to embark on this Yellow Campaign initiative, but then we can't forget that, you know, there was that element of his aide who was LGBT, if I'm not mistaken. So was it Lukman, or I can't remember his name right now. But, you know, whether that could have been also a show of support for the LGBT community.
Well, I'll tell you what, if the original Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort, wanted to find a way to come back into the system, I think there's an argument for him to be reintegrated because of the kind of insights and the kind of strategies that he could put into play to prevent other white-collar fraudsters.
Yeah, sorry, just to clarify, the personal aide was Numan Afifi Sadan, who, according to him, resigned on his own accord. And Syed Saddiq tweeted, "You'll always be a bro," but was slammed on social media for not standing up, you know, for his bro.
Well, Ro has just stepped in and waded in, saying that Syed Saddiq is way ahead of the curve and actually doing the opposition a favour. And perhaps the ex-PM and ex-DPM will have a second chance at politics if convicted.
Right. So you reckon that, you know, we should be okay with hiring ex-convicts. The question is whether, you know, I'm all for hiring ex-convicts, you know, for new jobs, but whether we want them in the ministry, right? This is public money.
Yeah, distinction to be drawn. Huge, case by case, typically.
Yeah, what jobs and what are they doing? And have they reformed? If they've served their time, then yeah, I think second chance would be good. But also, in what capacity are they coming out and what jobs are they doing?
Well, I think the reference point for Syed Saddiq is the fact that a lot of the ex-convicts that he might be referring to are the petty misdemeanors.
Yeah, so
you know,
young guys, given that
they've got a whole life ahead of them.
Correct.
Absolutely, they should be given a second chance.
Okay, yeah, because that is the point that he made. You know, some of the convicts were very young. They made mistakes in the past.
Have
served the jail sentence, yeah.
We've all made mistakes when we were young. It's
yeah,
just that
let's
we've
not,
been kind
yeah.
of like shielded by our families and by society because of
good
where
point.
We've come from.
Very good point, Chuang. Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We want to hear from you this morning. We're listening. What do you think about Syed Saddiq's comment about wanting to hire three former convicts to work within his ministry? Again, this is, I think, a proposal still, so nothing concrete just yet. All right, we've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up next, brought to you by Sabrina Magdalene. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:38. Right now, this is The Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce and Chuang here, keeping you company as you start your day. Stevie Wonder there with Uptight. Now, we have a WhatsApp message from someone who is anonymous right now, weighing in on that conversation we had a little bit earlier before the news about the Youth and Sports Minister Syed Saddiq's proposal to hire three former convicts to work at his ministry. Now, this person on WhatsApp has asked, is Syed Saddiq trying to win brownie points with the masses? His intention is good and all, but first and foremost, as youth minister, what has he pushed for the youth? Maybe he's done something, but I'm unaware, and it seems like he's not doing enough despite his passionate promises for youth before the election. I do have to say, though, to be fair to Syed Saddiq, and in response to your question here, he has done quite a fair bit for the youth. I mean, first and foremost, has come that, you know, that lowering the voting age, the age limit for voting, right? So that was an election promise, and he has secured that at least.
That is huge, right?
That is massive. Absolutely, so there huge. You go. We also have a message from Jay, I believe, from Klang, saying that he supports this move. We have too many incapable staff at the ministry. Now, convicts would appreciate the job better and have more reasons to prove themselves.
And try harder as well.
For sure. We have Tenny also on WhatsApp saying, convict Mali Sundaram Berhad, ex-convict Mali Sundaram Berhad. All right, another piece of news that caught our attention this morning is Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi's daughter, Dato' Nur Hidayah Ahmad Zaid. She posted a video of her daughter on Instagram. This is last Friday. And this video was of, if you've missed it, it was of Zaid Hamidi's granddaughter saying that, to quote her, "You can lock my grandpa up, but his soul and fighting spirit, but not his soul and fighting spirit. We are his family, and we will never stop praying for him." And she adds, "I will make your life unpeaceful. I will make you regret your life. Remember, I'm only 9 years old, but I am my country's future."
Yeah, look, I mean, when I saw that video, and this was actually something that was sent to me by several people, I was actually highly disturbed at basically this whole episode, because, I mean, the kid is 9 years old and she's saying these things on the social media by her parents. She's in a moving car. She's not wearing a seatbelt. There's all kinds of things that are going through my mind.
So many concerns.
I mean, but chief among which is the fact that a nine-year-old is being made to basically communicate what is essentially an opinion, not of herself, but of her parents.
Yeah, and I think a lot of opinions have come up from that. You know, we've garnered a lot of what's trending on social media right now. I mean, she's gotten, the nine-year-old girl has gotten some verbal harassment. I think there's some people...
Or cyberbullying.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And you have the Deputy Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, Hannah Yeo, coming out to say that, you know, parents should protect their children instead of allowing such videos to float on the internet. And she says, "I agree that we should stop sharing the child's video because she's too young to understand what's going on." And, you know, it is normal for her to be attached to her granddad, her grandmom, you know. So... she's only nine. I think that's where we are today. And you know, for her to say what she did on that video,
Even the choice of words.
But I don't condone the cyberbullying that has taken place. Some of the insults are really harsh. This is a child we're talking about. But the idea of not sharing the video, right? The mom shared the video. The parent shared the video of this child. So you're now asking netizens not to share the video that you yourself shared?
Something wrong somewhere, right?
Yeah, Hannah Yeo is the one who's asking people not to share the kid's video because she's saying don't share the kid's video. She's saying that she's too young to understand what's going on. That's Hannah Yeo. But I think, yeah, the child's parent herself posted this online. I think she perhaps...
And the question is why, right? Mm. Why would you as a parent expose your child like that?
Well, to get sympathy. Very simple, right? You know, nine-year-old girls are very opinionated already at that stage, right? The problem is that opinion is formed by and large by the parents. And as you say, a nine-year-old's opinion of a grandfather will be very, very one-dimensional and very, very cloistered to what he or she understands about the current grandparent in a personal space. He or she, the child, does not know what the grandparent does outside of that personal household experience. And that is the problem.
Yeah, because it's a filtered view.
Yeah, exactly. And we're not sure whether this is really her own words, or was it scripted? Was it implanted? Was it incepted? You know, there's so many questions. You know? Okay. Just, she's not.
I want to believe the best in people. So I'm going to go with the view that the daughter of Zaid Hamidi, the mother of this young girl, wanted to allow the child to express what I think may have been her own love for her grandfather, right? So the good thing about this is that the mom disabled the comments. The idea was, okay, so I'm going to post this video up and I'm going to disable the comments so no one can say anything bad about my child. But that's not the way social media works.
You can't have your cake and eat it as well.
Mm.
Okay, and the choice of words, I will make your life unpeaceful. I will make you regret your life. Remember, I'm 9 years old. I'm the country's future. I mean, those three sentences were very disturbing.
You can't deny how confident she was when she sounded. How confident she sounded in this video.
My first impression when I heard her talk was the fact that she doesn't sound like a local Malaysian who went to a local school. She sounds like she's been to international school. She's been couched in the IB way of delivering, having your own opinion and speaking up in public. More, you know, even lesser to a video camera, to a mobile phone.
Okay, Aris has weighed in on WhatsApp. Thank you for your message this morning, Aris Nazman, saying that it was immature for the parents to involve the grandchild in it. On top of that, instilling violent threats into this matter. And Aris reckons that it was obvious she was reading from a script. So I think, you know, the issue here is also the way she, I guess, you know, issued that I will make you regret this, right?
Yeah, wow. I don't know, just all kinds of mixed feelings. Look, I mean, social media is a dangerous, dangerous place. It can be venomous, right? And as you say, Melissa, you can't have it your way and not the other way. Because
you can't just
the
not...
The whole idea of social media is the whole interaction.
Exactly. You can't post it up and expect people not to have any comments or any feedback on that. And to post up that video of your 9-year-old child.
Mm. Yeah, but, and of course, being parents ourselves, Joyce going on, the first thing we thought was, hey, the car is moving and she's not wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah, this morning we were talking about I was like, where's the seatbelt?
Yeah. We want to know what you think. Come join. Tell us what you made of this. 018-789-8899. That is the number to WhatsApp your thoughts into. And our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio. Tell us more on this next. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:51 right now. This is the Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce and Chuang here with you, reading all the messages that you've sent in this morning on WhatsApp and on Twitter, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're talking about that, I guess, the backlash from the video that was posted by Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi's daughter of the 9-year-old granddaughter and the cyberbullying that happened. I do want to read out a couple of messages. The first being Li Shun, who weighed in on WhatsApp, saying that she said that she thinks that you guys talking about it, speculating about her education background and if it was scripted, is further allowing exploitation of the child. And she's saying, tis Morning Run.
Okay, that's the point there. And I think Li Shun is right. But the issue is because the larger perspective here is the country. And it's not just any individual. It is the former Deputy Prime Minister and the current sitting President of UMNO, which is the largest component party in the government.
Mm.
So I'm sorry, but for this individual to have posted a video of a child, for whatever ostensible reason, you have got to take your cake and eat it as well. You can't have it both ways.
A lot of the messages on WhatsApp this morning and on Twitter are, I guess, condemning the move to post the video up. So we have Steve Lim, who says what the mother did was criminal to the 9-year-old child.
Yeah, we also have, I think, so Ro stepped in and said that, you know, child's innocence makes them vulnerable to manipulation, and it's up to the parent not to take advantage of this out of love and responsibility and not poison them for personal gain. But to the venomous retaliation, that's the cyberbullying, that is equally awful and a double standard.
Yeah, and speaking about the cyberbullying, right, so we had, I think over the weekend, Hartini Zainuddin, you know, the child rights activist Tini, she on Twitter criticized all the backlash from this video, and she said that whoever is insulting this 9-year-old girl, you can't have it both ways. You can't be outraged when cyberbullying happens to one child and then say it's okay for another just because you don't like her family's politics. So she's saying, lay off her. You have no right. You cannot justify this kind of bullying to Tini ever.
Yeah, I don't know. This is so complicated, right? Mm. It's like a Facebook profile. It's complicated, sorry.
A relationship status, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a difficult conversation to have, but one that is out there and in the headlines, in the news headlines this morning, given the fact that, you know, this child, the mother of this child decided to post this video up.
Yeah, and it's a live case. It's a live charges that's happening right now as we speak with the Deputy mm. Prime Minister, former Deputy Prime Minister.
But in this case, I must say I agree with Hannah Yeo to, you know, that we should stop sharing the child's video because she is too young to understand what's going on.
Mm.
You know, and the fact that, yes, her mom posted it up, but still, you know, we shouldn't add on to that fuel and post that up or share that through social media, through WhatsApp, where what other platform there is.
Well, the other story making headlines this morning or over the weekend had been former MCA President Dr. Chua Soi Lek. Now, I believe he had an interview with Malaysia Kini, and this was after his book came out. So he's saying now that, to quote this choice quote from this interview is that when your dad gives you money, do you ask if he stole it? So this was in reference that MCA had no way of knowing the source of funding that MCA received from BN parties during the 2013 general election. So he said there was already money given to MCA, but during that time, there was no 1MDB or news of 1MDB had not burst onto the scene yet. So when people give you money, when your father gives you money, will you ask your dad where the money comes from?
So this is the same guy that was caught in that video from 10 years ago, which caused him his political downfall. It was basically a sexual act. I'm not going to repeat exactly what it was. It was enough to cause his downfall. There was three things that came straight into my mind when I saw the story. Right? 470 million ringgit in 2013. So first of all, but things only 16.5 million went to the MCA. So my first thought was, why so little? Second of all, there was a election from five years ago, half a billion ringgit. I wonder how much 2018 cost BN. And third of all was this amount of money, right, for you to come out and say that your father gave it to you. I mean, ignorance of the law is no excuse. This is huge amount of money.
Mm.
This is basically the amount of money that for 500 million ringgit, it's basically twice the national budget.
Yeah, but this...
Right? Why can't this money go towards development expenditure?
But Chong, this kind of shows up like the norm
that's
been happening in Malaysia when it comes to politics and when it comes to election that is normal, right?
It's
that
normal.
To get a 16.5 million ringgit went to MCA. Oh, that's normal. You don't ask your dad or whoever they gave the money for elections because it's normal. Why would you question
this
that?
This is normalizing corruption, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you don't ask it because it's such accepted behavior within politics. And I think that for us is what is most disconcerting. But also, you're not a child and this is not your father. You're an adult with responsibilities. If you receive that amount of money, it is your responsibility
you
to
ask yourself,
where it's from, right?
You are serving the people. You are a civil servant.
But also, after you had all those thoughts, my initial thought was maybe you didn't want to know where the money came from.
Yeah,
and that's why you didn't ask.
Right.
Yeah, we often don't ask the questions we don't want to know the answers to.
And the second thing that came to my mind, well, the fourth or the fifth, right, is the fact that this Chua Soi Lek, he has presided over during this time the downfall of Malay, the Chinese part, they're supposed to represent Chinese interests. Right now, MCA has the grand total of one seat in parliament. One. Right, so Dr. Chua, what are you thinking? And you've got the audacity to come out and write a book about your life and then to come and say these things in public to Malaysia Kini, of all things? I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, I don't know. We can only speculate at this point in time what he was thinking. But judging from his comments made in this interview, he said that the money was received in good faith, so without knowing where he received it, where it came from, the origins of that money. All right, tell us what you think, 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a message here saying from no name at the Ivan. Sorry, we've got Ivan on WhatsApp saying he brushed off the comment from the child and we should not take the video to voice out our anger due to the immaturity of her parents. This was in reference to the video put out by the daughter of Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi. We've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up next, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.